António Alves Lopes is a physiotherapist and academic in Portugal, where since 2001 he has been a teacher in the Department of Physiotherapy at the Escola Superior de Saúde do Alqueto, where he has coordinated the department's Erasmus Plus program since 2014. António holds a degree in physiotherapy and a master's degree in physiotherapy sciences. His research contributions cover various areas of allied health sciences, with publications focusing on physiotherapy practice and education. His research interests include cardiorespiratory physiotherapy, evidence-based practice, and the integration of digital technologies in physiotherapy education and practice. António is also an active participant and working group leader in the European Network of Physiotherapy in Higher Education, where he helps drive innovation of physiotherapy education in Europe. In this episode, Ben and I talk to António about the Erasmus Plus blended intensive programs and the innovative approach to international education they aim to develop. And now we bring you António Lopes. Welcome, António Lopes. António is a physiotherapy lecturer in Portugal. He's recently completed running four blended intensive programs in physiotherapy back to back. Welcome, António.
Hello, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Cool. So maybe just to start with, tell us a little bit about what a blended intensive program is.
So I think in very straightforward, the blended intensive program are short and intensive, organized by groups or of at least three higher education institutions from different European countries or even associate third countries. And these type of programs try to combine short-term physical mobility for 5 to 30 days with the compulsory virtual component. So it has to have always a blended approach. So a first online approach or afterwards, but it has to combine between presential and online approach. So, and the most, I think, beneficial impact of this kind of program is that it really fosters international connection between higher education because we have to work together toward building up a program, recruiting students, and then doing the overall assessment of the program. And also, I think it can create some capacity within the participants because allow some cross-pollinization of innovation, different subjects, and even learning practice in the different participating universities. And of course, it really offers another options of mobility because we normally have a long-term mobility in Erasmus programs, and this kind of very straightforward, very focused programs allow for the mobility for shorter time. So it adds another layer of mobility options for our students and also teachers. So I think it can have a very interesting impact on that. And of course, with this kind of programs, a lot of networking happens. So when hosting other institution or going to other institution in this kind of programs, we met a lot of colleagues that are working in very nice projects. And then in the end, also have a very impact on the internationalization of every institution involved. So, yeah, I think in the overall, this option of blended intensive program are a very good opportunity for institution, teachers and students to really exchange new practice, ways of being. And in the end, build up a little bit this notion of being European. So, yeah, I'm a fan.
I like that idea of building up the notion of being European. So you talk about student and staff mobility. So just to, first of all, that sounds expensive. How many people are we talking moving around between these different institutions?
So normally these programs get funding for hosting. So the hosting institution that organized the program has some funds to deal all the hassle around organizing these kind of programs like rooms, material, working hours. So for the hosting institution, there's some money for organization. For the rest that are participating and having mobility, they rely in their Erasmus funding mobility grants. So the students and the staff comes in supported by Erasmus mobility. It doesn't cover everything, but it really helps on the traveling and accommodation. And then the host institution support during all the expenses during the program, like some meals and all the amenities that are being used during the program. So it's evenly divide between the incoming participants and the host institution. But I think in the overall, everyone benefits from it, even though you don't get all your expenses completely funded. And so, in relation to the first question, the number of students and teachers involved, it really depends on the program. If you are building up something for students, it's advisable that you have in this kind of program a minimal of 15 incoming students. So you have to have that notion for the program to be validated. But it's with students, it's very easy to achieve that number of minimal participants. And we have in some of the programs that we organize, 40 students participants. So it's very easy to have that minimal. And from teachers, we can have in the programs that we organize, we have in each of the programs, at least for the students, 8 to 10 incoming teachers. So it's a very big group that we managed to organize.
So that's 8 to 10 in total and 15 students in total, not per institution.
Yeah, minimal, but we can always have more.
Yeah. And then, so the BIP funding covers the host institution, and then each institution that is participating as a partner, they have a separate funding allocation through Erasmus that they use to cover the costs of their students and staff.
Yeah, it's expected that they use Erasmus funding for that.
So can I just ask about the kind of blended aspects of it? So is that also limited to the students who are actually going to attend in person, or is that a way of expanding the reach of it in the institutions beyond those students who will be sort of traveling? And it kind of what's like what do you feel the real benefits are, I suppose, of adding that aspect in, just to the sort of more traditional way of looking at internationalization, which is sort of people moving between countries, right?
I think that was on one of the biggest impact of COVID, that we tried to look, or at least were forced to look, to education in a different manner. So, and in relation to internationalization, it really changed. All the European programs that are running now have more and more more online approach, so relying less and less on mobilities. And we're seeing also that impact on this type of mobility programs. So the blended approach, it really fits the mindset of the area now. So it's very easy to understand by the partners. In relation to how this is connected with the students that are participating in this kind of BIP, so the main focus is that the online part is mainly for the students that are coming for the face-to-face week, because it's nicer to build up that community online that is going to meet face-to-face in during the presential week. It's nice to have that continue, but it's possible for the program to allow during the online phase to have a more broad audience, including other students and teachers during the online part, and having then only some of the students and teachers coming for the presential week. For the organization, it's way easier when we have the same batch of students in the online and also in the face-to-face week, because it's easy to build up the activities that they do throughout the BIP and to be more impactful on the overall product. For the teachers that are participating as lecturers or facilitators, I think that's not a problem, because we had from in the different BIPs teachers that only follow up and had a contribution online during the online section and also in the presential section, because technology can really allow that. That's, I think, easier for the students, not so much.
So I think just as an example, I participated in two of Antonio's BIPs as a kind of visiting lecturer, but wasn't involved in any of the mobility components. So I think there are those opportunities to pull in people who are not explicitly involved in that kind of as partners. And then just linked to that, Antonio, we talked the last time we met about the possibility of taking some of that online component and making it available more broadly after the BIP has run. So to expand the kind of lifespan of the BIP, so it doesn't only run in that kind of short period, but to take some of the content, some of the recordings, and make it available almost on an open access platform. Is that something that is possible, or was that just something we talked about maybe being a possibility?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility, because I think we use a lot of our time to developing these kinds of activities and also products, presentations, activities, and so on. And I think it's a shame if we are not able to expand a little bit more the impact of the program, even as a dissemination option. So, in the style that all the other projects are built up within the European community, there's always an open access approach to allow that the materials and the results to be available for the groups. I think we didn't reach from the BIPs that we organized still a mature phase. So I think some of the products really to be a little bit trimmed and reorganized to be able to be then disseminated. And for other products, I think thinking about the one that we organize about artificial intelligence, so everything is rolling so fast that the products that we built and all the presentation, I think they will have a very short lifespan in relation to updating. So I think it will be like a very interesting historical artifact of that time, what IE was for us, but in the future will be completely overcome or overshadowed by the development. So I see it in the good side to be able to disseminate this kind of projects that we build, but I think we still need to work a little bit more on them to have a more structured and organized that can be then assimilated and used by other partners.
So I'd be quite interested to hear a little bit more about the sort of topics that you've covered and what the focus has been of these, having not been involved in any of them. Could you talk me through a bit of that?
Okay, so we organize four BIPs this year. Two of them focus on students, so the students were the main actors of these two BIPs. And the other two mainly focus on teachers and staff. So trying to make even that, having more focus on students and two more focus on students. So the first two ones that were focused on students, one was it was the second edition of one BIP that last year we organized in Utrecht. This year we organized in our institution that is mainly focused on global health. So I know that's a very big and broad theme, but we try in not only focus on physiotherapy and on not only for physiotherapy students, because we involve other students from other disciplines. But the main focus was to bring the group and discuss what are the major challenge and also what kind of solution that we as a group, multidisciplinary, multi-international group, can work towards trying to resolve or at least tackle. So, and this program had three major aspects. The first one, we try in the online part, connecting students, make them reflect about what are the major challenge and also realities in their own countries. And they discuss that using some of the lectures that we gave also. And then connect and discuss the different realities. And then when they come to the face-to-face week, we divided the week in five topics, more or less, or four and a half topics. And throughout the days, we discussed them, these topics like the impact of migration, non-communicable diseases, the age gap, and also related to the aging effects on the health of population and also economic impact. So we try to discuss the major challenge at the moment. And then for each of the days, the students reflect. And throughout the week, they build up as groups, as multidisciplinary groups and multinational groups. They try to come up with some innovative approach or solution. And in the end, they share them between the groups and they had a very nice discussion day about their proposals. So this was the main topic of one of the BIPs, global health. The other one, it was more focused on physiotherapy practice. It was a little bit focused on physiotherapy students, and it was related to digital health. So we try also using the same structure than the Blip in Global Health. We had an online part when we discussed the major contextual themes like the impact of digitalization in healthcare and also some concerns about patient privacy and ethics about the uses of digital health. And then when they come to the face-to-face week, we try to discuss throughout the week the impact of digital health in the physiotherapy practice, following the process of physiotherapy from assessment to decision making to intervention, and then something related to electronic health records and also how to disseminate and support your practice throughout your working life. So it was more or less the same structure. The student had to connect in the online part, had to discuss their national realities about digital health, and then in the face-to-face week, we put them together and they had to develop throughout the week also a small approach towards then already developed challenge that we had from you are a novice physiotherapist that want to support your clients in a more continuous, so we can use some digital approach. So what is your solution for that? So we give them challenge and they had to throughout the program develop, and this was mainly focused on students. And on each of these BIPs we had between 8 to 9 co-organizing institutions, so we can build a very large group of co-organizers from Finland, from the Netherlands, from UK with the participation of Michael. We have from Spain, we had a lot of participants institution, and then have in each of these groups 40 participants of students. So we had a very big group, and I think it was very intense and also very productive. This was for the students. In relation for the staff, that was a completely different ball game because we are more focused on the staff and developing some awareness and knowledge with the staff. One of the BIPs was focused on artificial intelligence. We build up this BIP based on the work that we're doing on the ENFI, European Network of Physiotherapy in Higher Education. So we have there a working group on emergent topics, and one of the topics is artificial intelligence. And we use that structure and also that group that already is formed in the European network to build up this BIP that is really focused on the uses of artificial intelligence in education and learning and also in research. And we use also this blended approach. So before coming, the participants had some sessions, online sessions, where they discussed the major impacts on their own lives as teachers and also in their future, already current life as researchers, and try to discuss the overall impact of artificial intelligence. And then when they come to the face-to-face week, we discuss them, and it's like the major topics, like the impact on self-productivity of IE and also on teaching and learning, on research, and also some of the things related to implementation and ethics about using artificial intelligence. And it was very nice because you had an approach that allow some lecturing time, but also some workshop for the participants to work on some dialogue on their own challenge on their day-to-day working activities. And this, I think, that was more focused on the participants' needs, and also it was more flexible because we had a structure, but the structure throughout the week was changing accordingly to the needs of the participants. Final one, and sorry for taking so long.
No, it's good, interesting.
the last one, it was a little bit different because it was like it was not only a co-organization; it was a co-creation. This one was really focused on educators, in physiotherapy educators. It's called Blended Intensive Program in Innovative Learning Strategies. And we we started with thinking about what are the major influence of the education in these centuries from the changing of the demographic of our students, for the need to innovate, to be sustainable and inclusive, and also to always have or trying to have an evidence-based approach to education. And we tried throughout this BIP to discuss the major topics like models of teaching and learning, some of the learning strategies that can be associated of these models of teaching, and also technology enhanced education. So I come back again and influence the process, and also how then we translate this to a clinical context, learning, and also discuss some of the assessment strategies if they are in tune with these models of teaching and learning strategies. And we build up the program. So before coming, we have a more longer online part with, I think, 5 or 6 sessions from each of the co-organizing, having the lead on these sessions and giving some introduction and creating some discussion for preparing for the mindset of the week. And then during the week, it was not focused on lectures or workshop, but for building up time. So we use this BIP to come together and as a within the co-organizers, dividing into major groups, we build up the 5 ECTS course into a main area. So we use this time this week to build up some future course that we're going to implement in our institution, individual or in co-organization. So it was a completely different approach, but I think it was very interesting that allows us to see that these programs also can be used not only for staff training, but also for developing projects as partners. Yeah. So more or less, this was the gist.
No, I mean, those examples sound really good and you know, quite different in terms of how they're sort of running, you know, based on the sort of needs and the aims for the people there. And I really like those, the sort of staff focus ones that just feels like, you know, in comparison to a sort of conference, you know, which I don't know, but probably costs about the same, right? You know, for people to attend and whatever, where, you know, that learning is much more passive and it, if it happens at all and it's happening there, you know, just across those days, but sort of having the structure of the blended approach where people have already engaged and are then turning up ready to do something and really wanting to kind of launch straight into something that goes deeper feels like a really useful way of approaching that sort of staff development side of things, you know, particularly on topics where there's not necessarily, you know, people don't have the expertise within their own institution necessarily. So being able to pool some of that expertise together and again use that blended approach to do that just feels like a really useful way, you know, quite in addition to all of the sort of benefits of the student focused ones, you know, and exposing them to that internationalized thing. So no, sounds really good. That's not a question. That's just just saying that I like it.
It's really interesting as an alternative to that kind of more passive approach to conferences where you kind of arrive, sit back and have someone talk at you for a day. Antonio, it sounds like an enormous piece of work around coordinating and planning, and I'm sure it must have taken up a significant portion of your time over the last 12 months. I'm interested to know if the funding covered any of your time where you could buy yourself out from university responsibilities to build up some of these programs. And then I'd also like to know a little bit more about how you approached the planning and coordination components, having to manage people from 8 to 10 institutions, student mobility, all those kinds of things. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Okay. So besides in my institution, besides being a lecturer, mainly in the cardiorespiratory context, I have the role also of internationalization. So I'm in my department, I'm responsible for organizing Erasmus mobility programs and also leading some of the European projects that we are involved. So I already have some of my time related to this topic. So I consider this part of my function as Erasmus responsibility and internationalization facilitator in my institution. Of course, the thing that I did this year, trying to organize all these bits, I saw it more as an opportunity to really to expand the options that my school has in internationalization and to really to throw the rock into the pond to see all these ripples happen. So I know that some of the hours are not covered. I had to take some extra extra hours, but I consider it as my project, as a way to develop internationalization in my school. I have this already this role, and the way I allocate my effort, it's completely depend on my decision. So it was my decision to organize it like that. If it is sane or not, that's another question. We can discuss that. But of course, when you are more motivated toward the end products and all the process, I think it's easier to consider that as a fruitful time. So yeah, it's okay. Yeah, in relation to that. In relation to the second question about organization, first, for starters, it's not possible to do these kind of programs without having very good partners. So all the partners that were really involved in this program collaborate throughout the process, and without them, it would be very difficult from recruiting students, from contributing to the program, from organizing activities, for having all that active aspects throughout the program. I think that was the main aspect that I rely upon to organizing this in a fruitful way. I have to say that I'm fortunately of participating in the European Network of Physiotherapy in Higher Education, ENFHE, because it really allows me to connect with other colleagues and to create relations, networking that allows me to easily recruit partners for this kind of programs and having, I think, the right partners for the program. So I think this is a very strong point of this organization aspect is look for the right partners or the partners that are willing to participate in a very flexible but also incremental way throughout the program. But there are some hassles during this process because we are coordinating and also building up the program completely online, because we met maybe in the beginning of the during in one of the conference presential just to assume us as partners within this project, and everything after that till the face-to-face week happens completely online. So we rely a lot of schedule and very clear meetings with a very clear structure that allows us throughout these different meetings, and I have for each of the BIPs between 4 to 5 to 6 online meetings with the co-organizing just to organize topics and structure, deciding what is the main topic will be, how it will structure in the online and also the face-to-face part. And that's other very important aspects is the timeline of implementation, because we are dealing with different institutions in different countries that have different curricular schedules. So that is the tuning in of the right time for the face-to-face week. It's, I think, the first decision that we have to make, because yeah, everything is going to be developed around that face-to-face week. So one very important meeting about deciding when it's going to happen. Another meeting that is important, because these BIPs, at least for the students, has to have at least a minimum of 3 CTS, and they have to have some credits around it and also some assessment. So we have to decide, are we going to assess the students in the end? Are we going to create then the grade that allows them to be credit in their own institution? Because this is important. In this kind of BIPs, the students can earn credits that they can substitute some of the things that they are doing in their institution, or even as an adding aspects to their final diploma. Other very important aspect of throughout these meetings is participant recruitment. We try to have a more evenly distribution, so a minimal or maximum, in some case, of 5 students per institution to allow to have a very multinational, multi-institutional group, very well distributed. So that is the difficult part, trying to facilitate this process in their different institution to allow that the students that want to come are recruited, are informed, and then have to take then care of the mobility aspects like traveling and accommodation. And of course, very important part it's during all this process before coming and during is taking care of the logistics. So the logistics really takes a lot of time, organizing classrooms or organizing materials, organizing like social activities that we do around the program also. And that takes a lot of time and effort. But if we, in my case, I connected with the municipality of my region. So we worked together with the municipality that gave us aspect like having a bus to pick up students from a central place in the city and bringing through the school and back and forth, and also have some social activities around. So it was also nice that we connect with a civil municipality that allows us to give an extra during the program. And in the end, I think the one thing that is interesting around the program is to do a program evaluation and feedback. So we, in the teach and the students BIPs, we, in the end, we created a survey that we assess or try to identify what was the major points of the program, what was the weaker points. And with that, we can, now we are to use that results to disseminate also within the Erasmus Network of Physiotherapy in Higher Education in ENFI in the conference next year or this year in Poland. And we're going to also to show the results and the feedback of the students and using that also to disseminate our program. So in the overall, it's something like that. It takes some time, but with the help of the partners, I think it's possible.
Apologies. So for each of the BIPs that's been put together, is that sort of like one and like done, or is the intention that, you know, this would be something that you would could run again on a cycle, like for people to come back through?
The aspect in relation to organizing the BIPs is that the host cannot repeat the BIP in the next year. So it has to have a circular option. So if the BIP was organized in my institution this year, if we want to organize the same BIP, it has to be organized in other institution to allow a really circular aspect. So, and we have that. So the BIP in global health that we organized was the second edition that was last year organized in Utrecht. And next year, because we are building up already for the third edition, is going to be organized in Graz in Austria, one of the partners. So it's the plan is not in some of the BIPs is to repeat them, but repeat in a different institution. And I think that's a very interesting aspect because it really allows that that mobility to happen and influence each of the institution in a different way, because internationalization is not only something that you do abroad in another country, but if when you it also it's something that you create within your institution using incoming teachers and students, because that allows internationalization at home. So, and coming back to your question, so the plan is in the next year to organize the Global Health BIP in Graz, Austria, as I said, the third edition. And also to organize the second edition of the Digital Health for Students in Finland with the Finnish partners hosting. Also the second edition for the BIP for teachers in IE in Czech Republic. That's a possibility that we are working on. And yeah, so it's like I said before, it's like throwing a rock to the pond. You create ripples and then these BIPs are starting to popping up around the different institutions that were involved.
I really liked what you were saying, Antonio, about the way that you kind of integrate this into your workload and the way that you think about your kind of daily responsibilities. I think if you were trying to do this over and above or on top of what you're already doing, you know, in a full workday, it must be really difficult to try and integrate something like this. But what I really liked was what you were saying about how you think of this as kind of contributing a body of work to your school and building out capacity in that way. And it reminded me of some of the different ways that we can think about scholarship and scholarly activity. And how do we recognize pieces of work like this that are significant, that do contribute to the body of knowledge, but we don't really have strong mechanisms in the institution to recognize and reward this as a scholarly activity. And I was just thinking there may be some things that could be added to something like this that might help it fulfill the criteria to qualify a scholarship. So One of the things that we talk about is dissemination. So at the moment, when the BIP finishes, then it exists as a collection of artifacts on a shared Google Drive somewhere. If we could create some kind of a platform where we could publish the lectures, the outcomes, the findings, the evaluations, all of the products and the processes of the BIP, then that kind of satisfies the dissemination criterion for scholarship. We could bring in a peer review component where we could ask external people to peer review the lectures, the notes. Then it kind of ticks the peer review component. And so, you know, if with some, I'm not suggesting that you do this. I'm really fascinated with scholarship and how we tend to focus all of our attention on research papers as the thing to be rewarded. And yet you could make a good argument that the work that you've done for these BIPs would have connected more people, had more of an impact than writing a paper on any one of these topics. And so I'm really fascinated with trying to figure out how we could do better in the sector to recognize as scholarship the kind of work that you've been describing here. Again, same as Ben, not a question, just something that kind of triggered a series of thoughts.
I think we as educators, we are doing this, we are facing this with a mixed feelings. We know that we want to get better being an educator and creating the nice, very good activities that promote that, all the aspects related to developing our innovative approach to learning. But in the end, we know that we are really assessing the amount of papers that we produce. So that's a mixed feeling. So we are working towards one aspect, and then we are really assess in a very quantitative way for the other aspects. And we try to reflect and at least to understand how we can combine. And sometimes it's not very easy because at least me as a health professional coming from health profession, of course, we tend to see research in a more quantitative way, and educational methodologies sometimes is very difficult to combine towards research methodology. So sometimes it's not easy to see how we can combine and make it very explicit. There is an effort, I think, on the institutions to promote more and more education as an aspect, not only research and an aspect to assess on the teacher activities. But I think we still have to cover a lot of space because I think the focus are still mainly on research, the amount of papers and the lectures that we do, a very quantitative approach. And I think that really doesn't reflect all the thinking about education and implementing innovative approach that is not at least expressed on that. And the way at least we try to make some compromise within this. Every time we do a BIP like that, we try to collect some information and make it available, at least the results, and to involve other partners in this discussion. And I had some examples, from in the last AMFI, we present a poster about the BIP in global health, and it really allowed me to attract new partners for the second edition of the global health. So putting that information out there, showing the practice, not only the results, also I think brings something to the mix. So yeah, I don't have a quick fix. Maybe you can help me on that also.
We'll figure something out. I know that the at the moment the pressure is to take what you've done and convert it into a paper or a conference presentation. Whereas it feels like that would be a forcing of the shape of what you've done into the shape of something that it's not meant to be. Like what you've done with the BIPs, it can be shared as a research paper or a conference presentation. But it feels like what you've done is more, it feels more like an art exhibition. I always think of like a gallery as a way of expressing something in a way that's very different to what you would experience in reading a research paper. So what might it look like to walk through the art gallery of the BIP? And, you know, where might all the artifacts be placed, and what would their journey look like, and how could people traverse that space? And so I'm really fascinated with thinking about
how we can take scholarly activity that we all do and maybe add a little bit to it. You know, we're kind of 80% there and adding a few bits and pieces, and then finding different ways to present that work in a way that other people could interact with it without requiring that they, you know, belong to an institution that happens to have paid for the journal fees to allow you to read the paper in the journal it's published. Anyway, a little bit of a tangent there. What does the application for funding look like? Is this something that you have to, you know, set aside a month of your time and write up the funding application? Or is this a two-pager where you kind of put your hand up and say, I'd like to do this thing, please give me some money?
Yeah, compared to the rest of the funding procedures in the European Union, this is very easy. So, because this is already integrated in the Erasmus Mobility Program, so they already recognize this blended internship program as an option within the Erasmus Mobility. So it's very easy because in Erasmus Mobility, we have a platform where we state all the projects that we have to build or want to build. And this can be done at least 1 year. So if I want to organize something next year, I have to submit on February this year. So we have sometimes in advance, you create that proposal. And it's very straightforward, less than one page of information about the topic, the partners that could be involved, the expected outcome. So it doesn't take a lot. And then in the end, after the program finish, you have to fill then again that platform with some information about how many participants that you had, how many days it occurs, what was the major outcome. So the final statement. And yeah, we're talking about one or two pages of information. So it doesn't take a lot. So that's not the limitation of organizing this program. So that's not the limitation.
Just a related question. Does the funding body require any specific outputs in order for you to qualify for another round of funding? Or do you just have to complete it?
Yeah, you only need to complete. And because all the information between the mobilities within the institutions are also stated on that platform. So all the information is crossed. So they can really have that information collected. So for my institution to be able to send the students within this program, we have to have a code of the program. So the students' mobility is connected with that code. So it's very easy to follow that information. So it doesn't take a lot. Sometimes, and that can happen, if you don't reach the minimum of participants, they can retreat the funding for the host institution, not for the mobility. So if I don't reach the minimum of participants, my institution have to give back the funding money. And that's the only the problem. That's the only situation.
But I think this is where it's, you know, it's good to have a program like Erasmus, where the aim is the mobility, whether that's, you know, physical or not. But that so the outputs they're interested in are that rather than on, you know, the evaluation necessarily or the sort of research outputs or whatever. I'm just interested. So obviously we've got an election on Thursday in the UK. The party that's going to win is not committed to trying to re-enter Erasmus, which feels a shame. I just wondered what your take would be on what the benefits to the UK would be, just to put this in a very UK-centric kind of question. But in doing so, reflecting on what the benefits have been to this sort of students and staff, you know, who've been able to take part, and you sort of touched earlier on that sense of being European and why that's something that is kind of relevant to physio educators, students, and the sort of wider group.
Okay, it's very difficult for me as an outsider to have a real opinion about UK politics, but I can give you, not replying directly to your question, I can give you the Portuguese example. So when I was born, my country was still under a dictatorship. So in the year that I was born, the year after, when I had only some months, my country stop being a dictatorship and become a democracy, a full democracy that we are building up year by year. So that was had a big, very big impact on the society. And the other very big impact of the society, it was some 10 years after we entered the European community. And that brings all the all different aspects to the society, to the economic, to the education. What we evolve throughout these years could not be supported without being part of this big community. So as a country very in the outskirts of Europe, very very detached from the central, we thought that this impact of being a part of institution, being a part of European community, being allowed to travel easily, being allowed to study and work in a different country has bring a lot of impact, you know, on the society, the way that we see ourselves and the way that we envision our future as part of a bigger group. So from a small country, the only advice that I can give to UK, that any direction that takes you out of this being part of a larger group, of a larger community, be able to really to have a network, to be mixed with other sensibilities, I think it's a, how can I say, it's a misstep. So I can say every step that you take in the different direction than being a part of this larger group, I think it doesn't contribute with the vision of a future of a country. So I can see it only like that.
And is that something that you really see the students who take part kind of leaving with a reinforced or a stronger sense of being part of that sort of larger group?
I think that's the biggest impact of this kind of being part of European community, but also participate in these mobility programs, that the students see themselves completely different. They are not only the sons or daughters of their country, but they feel they are part of a larger group, and they feel that their options really open on relation to how they see themselves and their future. So taking that from the next generation, I think you're going to compromise somehow how that generation is going to work with others. So, yeah.
I just had one other question that I'd wanted to ask. I know we're coming up for time. Could this be an elective module for students that contribute to the kind of formal program? Or is it just kind of a trip that they take where they learn something interesting and then they kind of move on? Or does it kind of do the credits, are there credits, and do those credits flow back into their formal programs?
There are different ways of doing that. So you can have a very easily and loose approach. So the students know that this won't contribute for their credits in their program, but it's an experience and the students accept it. Or you can have a more mix that the students go, or if in my students in my school, they go to that program and they use that credits as an adding to their diploma. So besides the normal amount of credits, they have an addition that states that they have been part of this program. Or as we decided to organize in our school, being part or participating as students in this BIP are included, are integrated in the curricula in an optional curricular unit that you have that to allow the students that doing the BIP substitute the credits of that curricular unit. So in our case, we build up in the way that is integrated. We create space in the curriculum that allows this kind of optional activities or optional models. And the students select these models and they get the credits as the other students that are doing other models. So for us, it's completely transparent. So yeah, so the students being part of the BIPs is like doing a curricular unit in our school.
Thanks so much, Antonio. Is there anything else that you wanted to add about the BIP that we haven't covered that you think might be useful or interesting?
No, I think we cover most of the things that is important. I think there is a lot of things that I could not put words on it to organize, but I think the strongest point, or at least the strongest impact that I had as organizer of these BIPs, first, it's possible even with low resources to organize these kind of programs. It doesn't take a lot of efforts in like a structure of the school, or even a small school like mine, can organize this kind of programming. So it doesn't take a lot to organize it. And the sense that we build up this together, we don't consider this a complete work. And from BIP to BIP, we are introducing always new new additions, new revisions. And this continuing process is very interesting because it maintains the program updated. And I think that's a very interesting aspect, is that it's not a finished work that you just repeat it often more. It's something that we build up and make revision and integrate new partners, and some partners left the program, the others enter. So that creates some flexibility that is very interesting and updated. So, yeah.
Cool. Did you have any other questions, Ben?
No, I think, just really interesting from my side. I certainly came into this not having, you know, particularly heard of the blended intensive program part of Erasmus, but I think it makes an awful lot of sense, you know, the way that you've sort of discussed it, and that you know you can see how there's an evolution of this idea of what internationalization might look like, and how much you can sort of really make the most of a short but punchy interaction over the course of that week, you know, with using technology and you know, drawing on ways that we know learning works to kind of create something that's then, you know, it sounds like it produces just a really interesting experience for whoever's taking part. So no, thanks. I've enjoyed hearing about them.
Cool. Thanks very much for your time, Antonio. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.